Death was not a stranger to Godric Alistair Lancaster, yet it had never been so cowardly as to rot him from the inside. When every royal physician declared the Lycan King an unsalvageable corpse, a destitute widow named Beverly Fay Lee stepped forward to defy the heavens and rewrite history. Winter in the Earldom of Westmore did not just chill the bones. It froze the very hope of its people. In the year 1342, the undisputed ruler of the northern reaches, Godric Alistair Lancaster, was dying. Known to his enemies as the Iron Wolf, Godric possessed a lycan healing factor that had previously survived battle axes, silver-tipped arrows, and the brutal plagues that swept through the peasant villages. Yet for 3 agonizing months, the king had been confined to his grand oak bed, his formidable frame reducing to a husk of pale, sweat-slicked skin and jutting bones. The affliction was entirely unprecedented. Godric's veins bulged with an unnatural, sickly violet hue. Whenever the full moon crested the horizon, a time when lycans were supposed to be at the absolute peak of their vitality, Godric would violently convulse, coughing up thick black bile that scorched the stone floor of his bedchamber. The royal council, desperate and terrified of neighboring territories, sensing their weakness, emptied the royal treasury to summon the greatest minds across the continent. High healers from the eastern courts, cloaked apothecaries, and even practitioners of the dark arts paraded through the king's chambers. Leading them all was Lord Rhianna Sinclair, the chief royal physician. Sinclair was an aristocratic man with soft hands and a silver tongue, a man who charged exorbitant sums for concoctions of powdered gold and crushed pearls. Sinclair's diagnosis was absolute. The king's inner wolf had turned against him. According to the chief physician, Godric was suffering from the lycanthrope's blight, an irreversible deterioration of the soul and body. Sinclair shook his head gravely at the council, pocketing another heavy purse of silver coins, and declared, "There is nothing more to be done. We must prepare for his passing and ensure the transition of power is managed appropriately." But Sinclair was a liar. Far from the towering stone spires of the Lancaster Keep, nestled in the muddy, unforgiving outskirts of the lower village, lived Beverly Fay Lee. Beverly was a 28-year-old widow whose life had been a continuous string of tragedies. Her late husband, a low-ranking border guard named Arthur, had been killed in a rogue skirmish 3 years prior. Left with nothing but a crumbling thatched cottage and 2 young children with hollow bellies, Beverly survived by doing what the nobility considered beneath them. She foraged in the treacherous Whispering Woods, a place supposedly cursed, gathering rare flora and fungi. Beverly was no trained scholar. She could not read the Latin texts of the high healers, nor did she wear fine silks. Her hands were permanently stained with soil and sap, her nails cracked from digging in frozen earth. But Beverly possessed something Rhianna Sinclair did not, generations of passed down brutal peasant knowledge. Word of the king's specific symptoms had trickled down from the castle servants to the village market. While the peasants wept for their dying king, Beverly listened intently. Violet veins, black bile during the full moon, the inability to shift into his wolf form. She knew instantly that it was not a disease of the soul. Godric Lancaster had been poisoned. Specifically, he was suffering from a slow, methodical dosing of Aconitum ferox, a highly toxic strain of wolfsbane, mixed with pulverized silver oxide. The combination was designed not to kill a lycan instantly, which would raise suspicion of assassination, but to slowly suppress the healing factor until the body consumed itself. Only someone with daily access to the king's meals and medicines could administer such a precise, deadly cocktail. Beverly realized the terrifying truth: the very healers tasked with saving the king were the ones murdering him. Sinclair was dragging out Godric's death, to bleed the treasury dry and position himself as the prime advisor to whatever puppet successor the council installed. For 3 nights, Beverly wrestled with her conscience. To approach the castle as a peasant woman was to invite a flogging. To accuse the chief physician of treason was a guaranteed death sentence. If she stayed silent, she and her children would continue to starve under the incoming corrupt regime of Sinclair. But if she saved the king, surely the reward would be enough to secure a future for her little ones. On the fourth morning, leaving her children in the care of a trusted neighbor, Beverly packed a worn leather satchel with the foulest-smelling, most volatile roots she had managed to harvest. Wrapping her tattered wool shawl tightly around her shoulders, she began the long, freezing trek up the cobblestone path to the Lancaster Keep. She was going to do the impossible, or she was going to die trying. The iron gates of Lancaster Keep were flanked by towering guards, who looked upon Beverly as if she were a rat that had crawled from the sewers. When she demanded an audience with the king, claiming she held the cure to his affliction, she was met with cruel, booming laughter. "Go back to your mud hut, beggar!" One guard spat, shoving her backward with the butt of his spear. "The king breathes his last. The royal physician has ordered no disturbances." Desperation fueled a fire in Beverly's chest. "The royal physician is the reason he is dying," she screamed, her voice cutting through the biting wind. "He is poisoned with silver oxide and mountain bane. I can strip it from his blood, but you must let me pass." Her accusations caught the attention of Captain Gareth Vance. No Captain Gareth Thorne, wait Captain Gareth Hughes, a scarred, fiercely loyal, lichen warrior who had fought alongside Godric in the trenches. Hughes had grown suspicious of Sinclair's constant excuses and the sudden wealth the physician was amassing. He stepped out from the guardhouse, his golden eyes narrowing at the shivering widow. "You know of the violet veins," Hughes demanded, his voice a low rumble. "I know that by midnight the poison will reach his heart, and no magic in this world will bring him back," Beverly stated, standing her ground, despite the trembling in her knees. Ignoring the protocol and the frantic protests of the gate guards, Captain Hughes escorted Beverly straight into the heart of the keep. They bypassed the council chambers and shoved past the heavy oak doors of the king's private suite. The stench of decay in the room was overwhelming. Godric Lancaster lay on the bed, his chest barely rising. His skin was gray, the violet veins throbbing faintly against his neck. Surrounding the bed were several high healers, including Rhianna Sinclair, who was in the process of administering yet another dose of a soothing syrup that smelled suspiciously of crushed silver. "Halt!" Hughes roared, his hand resting on the hilt of his broadsword. Sinclair turned his handsome face, twisting in aristocratic outrage at the sight of the dirt-streaked peasant woman tracking mud onto the Persian rugs. "Captain Hughes, what is the meaning of this? Have you lost your mind, bringing a filthy vagrant into His Majesty's sanctum?" "She says he is poisoned." "Sinclair," Hughes growled, stepping between the physician and the king. "And that you are the one pouring it down his throat." Sinclair's face paled for a fraction of a second before he recovered with a scoff. "Preposterous. Arrest this madwoman at once." Before the chamber guards could move, Beverly lunged forward. She didn't go for Sinclair. She threw herself at the bedside table, sweeping the golden chalices and Sinclair's medicinal vials onto the stone floor. They shattered, and the liquid sizzled violently as it seeped into the cracks of the stone, a chemical reaction no healing potion should ever have. The room fell deathly silent. "Give me 1 hour," Beverly pleaded, turning her fierce, desperate eyes to Captain Hughes. "If his color does not return, you may take my head yourself." Hughes nodded slowly. He ordered Sinclair and the protesting healers out of the room at sword point, locking the heavy doors behind them. Left alone with the dying king and the watchful Captain Beverly went to work. It was not a magical glowing healing process as depicted in royal tapestries. It was a brutal, ugly, and agonizing medical intervention. She unpacked her satchel. First, she took a bundle of raw, unwashed charcoal, crushing it with the pommel of Hughes's dagger, mixing it with an acidic sap from the ironbark tree. She pried Godric's jaws open. His breath smelled of rotting earth, and forced the thick abrasive sludge down his throat to bind with the remaining poison in his stomach. Next came the bloodletting, but not the blind foolish, draining the royal healers performed. Beverly took a sterilized blade and made precise, shallow incisions over the swollen violet veins at Godric's wrists and ankles. She applied poultices of crushed garlic nettle and a highly toxic red moss that only grew on the northern cliffs. The moss acted as a powerful drawing agent, fighting the wolfsbane directly. The reaction was immediate and terrifying. Godric arched off the bed, a deafening guttural roar tearing from his throat, the first sound he had made in weeks. His eyes snapped open, glowing a blinding, erratic amber. He thrashed with the latent strength of an alpha, nearly throwing Hughes across the room as the captain struggled to hold him down. "Hold him!" Beverly shouted, her hands stained with blackened, poisoned blood as she pressed fresh moss into the wounds. "The poison is fighting back. If he shifts now, his heart will rupture." For 45 grueling minutes, the king seized and howled in pure agony. Beverly worked tirelessly, wiping the corrosive sweat from his brow, reapplying the drawing salves, and whispering harsh grounding commands into his ear, treating the terrifying Lycan ruler with the same stern authority she used on her feverish children. Then, as suddenly as the chaos had erupted, it ceased. Godric collapsed back onto the pillows, gasping for air. The violet hue in his veins began to aggressively recede, replaced by the healthy, flushed crimson of oxygenated blood. His wounds, which had refused to close for months, suddenly began to knit together. Before their very eyes, his lichen healing factor had been unlocked. Captain Hughes dropped to his knees, openly weeping as he heard the strong, steady rhythm of his alpha's heartbeat returning. Godric blinked, his vision clearing. He turned his head slowly, his amber eyes locking on to the exhausted, disheveled peasant woman standing over him. For a fleeting second, an unspoken, profound connection passed between them, a recognition of the savior and the saved. "You!" Godric rasped, his voice raw and broken. Before he could say another word, the heavy oak doors burst open. Rhianna Sinclair, having rallied the royal guard and several corrupt council members, stormed into the chamber. "Arrest the witch!" Sinclair screamed, pointing a trembling finger at Beverly. "She has practiced dark blood magic on the king." Beverly was immediately seized by two armored guards, her arms wrenched behind her back. She looked toward Godric, but the king, utterly exhausted by the sudden cellular regeneration, rolled his eyes back and fell into a deep, comatose sleep. Sinclair rushed to the bedside, feigning overwhelming relief. "The heavens be praised, my final serum has finally broken the blight." He turned to the councilman, his chest puffed out. "I told you the treatment required patience. The king is healed." Hughes stepped forward, furious. "You lying snake, that woman saved him. Your potions were killing him." But Sinclair had already anticipated this. He produced a forged ledger, stamped with a fake seal, claiming Captain Hughes had been secretly funneling royal funds and conspiring with peasant witches to usurp the throne. The council, deeply entrenched in Sinclair's pockets, immediately sided with the chief physician. Hughes was stripped of his sword and detained for treason. Beverly was dragged screaming from the chamber, thrown down the stone steps, and tossed into the freezing mud of the courtyard. "You are banished from the earldom of Westmar," Sinclair sneered from the balcony above, looking down at her like dirt on his boots. If you or your bastard children are seen within these borders by sunrise, you will hang from the gallows. Instead of a reward, Beverly Fay Lee had lost everything. Bruised, battered, and weeping tears of sheer injustice, she fled into the night to collect her children and run. She had done the impossible. She had saved the Lycan King, and her reward was exile. But karma, especially in the northern reaches, is not a gentle teacher. It is a ruthless executioner, and Lord Rhianna Sinclair had severely miscalculated just how sharp an Alpha King's memory could be. Consciousness returned to Godric Alistair Lancaster, not as a slow sunrise, but as a violent collision of senses. For months, his world had been muted by the thick, drowning fog of wolfsbane and silver. Now his eyes snapped open to the sharp, piercing light of the morning sun. His lungs expanded fully, pulling in huge, unhindered breaths of air. The agonizing, perpetual burning in his veins had vanished, replaced by the thrumming, powerful rhythm of his restored Lycan heart. Godric lay perfectly still, letting his heightened senses map the room. He heard the hushed, nervous murmurs of the council members outside his chamber doors. He heard the crackle of the hearth, and overwhelmingly he smelled the cloying, unnatural scent of Rhianna Sinclair. "Your Majesty." Sinclair's voice was a soft, oily purr as the physician leaned over the bed. "Praise the heavens. You have returned to us." Godric turned his head. Sinclair wore a mask of profound relief, but Godric's alpha instincts tore straight through the facade. Underneath the expensive perfumes, Sinclair reeked of sour sweat, nervous adrenaline, and the metallic tang of pulverized silver. Then Godric remembered. Through the haze of his agonizing recovery, a fragmented memory pierced his mind. It was not Sinclair's soft, manicured hands that had pulled him from the abyss. It was the rough, soil-stained fingers of a woman. He remembered the harsh, commanding tone of her voice, the searing pain of the charcoal sludge, and the scent of wild pine rain and earth. He remembered locking eyes with her, a fierce, exhausted peasant woman who possessed more courage in her battered boots than the entire royal council. "Sinclair," Godric rasped, keeping his voice deliberately weak and raspy. He needed to play the invalid until he understood the full scope of the betrayal. You saved me." Sinclair's chest puffed out, a smug, triumphant smile breaking across his aristocratic face. "It was a grueling battle, my king. The blight was deeply rooted, but my final experimental serum proved victorious. It required immense skill and patience. I am in your debt," Godric whispered, closing his eyes to hide the lethal amber glow that threatened to bleed into his irises. "Where is Captain Hughes? I wish to see him." Sinclair hesitated, his heartbeat skipping a rapid, erratic rhythm that Godric heard clear as a bell. "I am afraid Captain Hughes has been detained, Your Majesty. During your delirium, we uncovered a plot. Hughes was siphoning royal funds and conspiring with local vagrants. He even brought a madwoman into this very chamber yesterday to disrupt your treatment. The council has ordered him held for treason." A deep primal rage coiled in Godric's gut, hot and heavy. The puzzle pieces snapped together with terrifying clarity. Sinclair was the poisoner. Hughes had tried to stop him, and the woman his savior had been discarded. "I see," Godric said softly, perfectly masking his murderous intent. "Leave me, Sinclair. I must rest." As soon as the heavy oak doors clicked shut, Godric threw off the furs. He did not stumble. He moved with the lethal, silent grace of an apex predator. He waited until the castle slept, the midnight bells echoing through the stone corridors, before slipping out of his chambers. He bypassed the guards with ease, keeping to the shadows of the rafters and the hidden servant corridors descending deep into the bowels of Lancaster Keep, The dungeons were freezing, damp, and reeked of despair. Godric silently snapped the neck of the solitary guard on duty, taking the iron keys and moving down the row of cells until he found Gareth Hughes. The loyal captain was chained to a damp wall, his face bruised, and his armor stripped away. When Hughes looked up and saw his king standing before him, fully healed and radiating pure dominant alpha energy, the battered soldier fell to his knees, weeping silently. "My king," Hughes choked out. "You live. Rise, Gareth." Godric commanded, unlocking the iron cuffs. "Tell me everything. Who was she?" Hughes detailed the entire agonizing ordeal. He told Godric of Beverly Fay Lee, the destitute widow from the lower village. He explained her desperate plea, her undeniable knowledge of the poison, the brutal improvised cure she administered, and the absolute injustice of her subsequent banishment. Sinclair threatened to hang her and her children if they were seen within the earldom by sunrise. Hughes explained, his voice thick with disgust. "She fled into the whispering woods, sire. A blizzard is moving in from the north. A woman and two starving children will not survive the night in that wilderness." Godric's jaw clenched so hard, his teeth groaned. The woman who had ripped him from the jaws of death, who had faced down armed guards and a corrupt court, was currently freezing to death in the snow because of a traitor's decree. "Remain here, Gareth." Godric ordered, his eyes flashing brilliant amber. "If Sinclair realizes I am missing, let him believe I was kidnapped. Let him assemble the council and prepare to seize the throne. I want every traitor in that great hall when I return." Godric did not bother taking a horse. As he breached the outer gates of the keep, he shed his royal garments, letting the freezing wind whip against his bare skin. With a thunderous, earth-shattering roar, the King of Westmore surrendered to the beast he had been denied for months. Bones cracked, and reformed muscle expanded, and dark, massive fur erupted from his skin. The Iron Wolf was free, and he was going on a hunt. The Whispering Woods were a frozen nightmare. The blizzard had descended with unforgiving fury, burying the forest floor in waist-deep snow and dropping the temperature to a lethal bone-cracking chill. Godric tracked her not by sight, but by scent. Even through the howling gale, his lichen senses locked onto the faint, fading trail of wild pine rain and the metallic tang of fear. He pushed his massive wolfish frame to the absolute limit, tearing through snowbanks and leaping over fallen frost-covered trunks. He had to find her. The debt he owed was absolute, but it was more than that. His inner wolf was howling for the woman who had claimed him from death. Deep in a rocky alcove, sheltered barely by a hollowed-out oak root, he found them. Beverly was huddled in the dirt, her tattered shawl wrapped tightly around a shivering boy and a whimpering girl. Beverly's lips were blue, her skin pale as porcelain, her eyes heavy with the fatal lethargy of hypothermia. She had given the last of her body heat to her children. A massive, hulking shadow blocked the entrance to the alcove. Beverly weakly lifted her head, her breath hitching, as a terrifying 9-foot-tall timber wolf with glowing amber eyes stepped into the small space. She pulled her children tighter, bracing for the end. But the beast did not attack. It let out a soft, rumbling whine that vibrated through the frozen earth. The giant wolf curled its massive, radiating body entirely around the small family, creating an impenetrable wall of fur and intense, unnatural heat. Beverly gasped as the life-saving warmth enveloped them. She looked into the wolf's amber eyes, and recognition sparked instantly. "You!" she whispered, her voice cracking. The wolf pressed its heavy snout gently against her forehead, a silent promise. They stayed that way until the storm broke at dawn. When the morning sun pierced the canopy, Godric shifted back to his human form, wrapping his heavy royal cloak around Beverly's frail shoulders. You defied the heavens for me, Beverly Lee. Godric said, his voice rough with emotion, as he lifted her children into his arms. Now the heavens will bow to you. Back at Lancaster, Keep a grand feast had been hastily assembled. Rhianna Sinclair, draped in newly tailored velvet, stood at the head of the long table, surrounded by the corrupt council members. With the king mysteriously absent, Sinclair was just moments away from declaring Godric unfit and installing a proxy ruler with himself, named as the Supreme Hand of Westmore. "My lords," Sinclair announced, raising a golden goblet filled with sweet wine. "Though we mourn the king's sudden disappearance, we must look to the future of the earldom." The heavy oak doors of the great hall exploded inward, splintering off their iron hinges. The room fell into a terrified, breathless silence. Godric Lancaster strode into the hall, flanked by a fully armored and reinstated captain, Gareth Hughes, and 50 heavily armed royal guards. Godric's eyes were locked on Sinclair, blazing with a fury so absolute it made the air in the room feel heavy. Beside the king, dressed in a hastily provided but warm velvet gown, stood Beverly, her chin held high. "Guards!" Sinclair shrieked, his face draining of all color. "The king is mad. He has brought the witch." None of the guards moved. Hughes stepped forward, dropping a heavy burlap sack onto the feast table. It clattered with the sound of glass. He pulled out Sinclair's hidden vials of Aconitum Ferox and the forged financial ledgers. "The plot is exposed, Sinclair." Godric's voice boomed, shaking the dust from the chandeliers. "Your ledgers detailing your payments from the southern moors, your secret caches of Wolfsbane. You bled my treasury and you tried to bleed me." Real history often dictates that traitors face the executioner's block, a swift and merciful end. In the private, newly unearthed journals of Sir Alastair Pendleton, a historical scribe of the era, the true fate of the treasonous physician was recorded, a punishment so flawlessly brutal, it became a chilling legend passed down through generations. Hard karma did not just knock on Sinclair's door, it battered it down. Godric walked slowly to the head of the table, his physical dominance forcing the corrupt council members to cower in their chairs. He picked up Sinclair's personal vial of soothing syrup, the very silver and wolfsbane mixture Sinclair had forced down Godric's throat. "You claimed this was the cure, Lord Sinclair," Godric said softly, though the menace in his tone was paralyzing. "You claimed it was your genius that healed the blight." Godric seized Sinclair by the throat, lifting the struggling, terrified man completely off the ground. He slammed Sinclair onto the banquet table, scattering golden plates and roasted meats. "If this is your cure," Godric snarled, prying Sinclair's jaws open, "then drink deeply of your genius." With ruthless precision, Godric poured the entire vial of liquid silver and wolfsbane down Sinclair's throat, forcing the physician to swallow every last drop. He then tossed Sinclair to the stone floor. Sinclair immediately began to violently convulse, clutching his throat as the corrosive poison went to work. The violet veins bloomed instantly across his neck and face. He looked up at the council gasping for help, but they were frozen in absolute terror, knowing their own fates were sealed. "Let him live," Godric ordered Hughes, staring down at the agonizing physician. "Lock him in the deepest cell. Let the poison run its full course. Do not offer him water. Do not offer him a blade to end it. Let him feel exactly what he gave me." Godric then turned away from the dying traitor and extended his hand to Beverly. In front of the trembling remaining nobility, the Lycan king dropped to one knee before the destitute widow. "You stripped the poison from my blood, Beverly," Godric declared, his voice echoing through the silent hall. You fought for a king who had done nothing for you. You saved my life. Now I offer you mine. The earldom of Westmore was forever changed. The corrupt council was stripped of its lands, and titles their wealth redistributed to the lower villages. Rhianna Sinclair wasted away in the dark, dying a slow, excruciating death from his own meticulously crafted poison, the ultimate, inescapable consequence of his own greed. Beverly Faye Lee did not just survive the winter. She was crowned queen of the northern reaches. The peasant widow who foraged in the mud sat upon a throne of iron and oak, ruling beside the Iron Wolf. Together they forged an era of unprecedented prosperity, proving that the most potent healing in the world does not come from powdered gold or royal blood, but from courage, loyalty, and the fierce, protective heart of a mother who refused to surrender. Did Beverly's unwavering bravery and Godric's brutally satisfying justice satisfy your craving for medieval karma? Hit that like button if you believe true loyalty should always be rewarded, and share this incredible, true-to-life story with your fellow romance and history lovers. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell so you never miss another epic tale of betrayal, romance, and ultimate revenge. Drop a comment below. What would you have done to Sinclair?